Roselva says, the only thing that doesn't change is train tracks. She's sure of it. It's an opening line in a poem by Palestinian-American poet Naomi Shihab Nye. She continues with young Roselva's assertion, the train changes, or the weeds that grow up spidery by the side, but not the tracks. I've watched one for 3 years, she says, and it doesn't curve, doesn't bend, doesn't grow. But hers is not a universally held perspective. Peter isn't sure. He saw an abandoned track near Sabinas, Mexico, and says a track without a train is a changed track. The metal wasn't shiny anymore. The wood was split and some of the ties were gone. These simple lines voicing a children's conversation could be taken as a kind of quick summary of ancient religion's primary impulse. It was a search for what doesn't change. What is fixed, solid, reliable, invariable. In primitive lives filled with precarious volatility and continual threats, they wondered, was there something constant, unwavering? Long generations before science began enabling us both to predict and to explain, little was more disconcerting to our primordial parents than change. So they looked for, wondered about, eventually told stories about what doesn't change. I will lift up my eyes unto the hills, sang an ancient Hebrew psalmist. There, in those lofty places, looming far above the fluid plains, subject to flooding, far above the wind-swept savannas and the shifting sands of the desert, there in the high places, the earth was immutable. But in time, they would learn life everywhere on our fragile ball is tenuous. Nature could be beautiful, bountiful, and with little warning could turn dangerous and destructive. So they looked up even higher, beyond Earth's majestic peaks. There in the heavens they found fixity, a predictable course of things in which the moon might wane, but would reliably wax again. Stars might wander, but would also return to their rightful places. The sun might drift ever southward, but would eventually stop, stand still, and then begin its northward course again. Many moderns still carry unconscious vestiges of that belief, in some cases literally looking up. They speak of the sacred, the eternal, as above, out there, far beyond this veil of pain and tears, from a distance, wrote Julie Gold in lyrics sung by Nancy Griffith and Judy Collins and Bette Midler. God is watching us. God is watching us from a distance, way up there where things don't change. The same science that teaches us to predict and to explain makes it clear that any belief in a fixed, reliable, constant cosmos is based on a woefully misinformed illusion. Massive solar flares, ominous asteroids, dark holes, dark matter, dark energy, violent explosions birthing new stars and spelling the demise of others, not to mention Klingons, stormtroopers, Daleks, Cybermen, the Master, and all other sorts of close encounters of a third kind. If all of that doesn't underscore cosmic capriciousness, research presented at this year's International Astronomical Union's General Assembly shows the universe has long passed its peak. In case you are feeling too hopeful today. Has long passed its peak and is slowly but surely dying. What doesn't change? We can look neither to the high places nor to the heavens for that which is constant. Our 19th century Unitarian forebear Theodore Parker set out to discover what he called in his famous address, the transient and permanent in Christianity. Reflecting both a limited understanding of science and a liberal sense of optimism, Parker declared, "Now, the solar system, as it exists, is in fact permanent." And similarly tried to articulate aspects of liberal religion that were, as he put it, permanent. By the time our 20th century Unitarian forebear religious philosopher Henry Nelson Wyman was writing as a religious naturalist, such confidence in theological fixity had been shaken. Wyman imagined God not as a supernatural being, but as a, as he called it, a creative event. Even God, by way of Wyman and those process theologians as well, was changing, was in process. That's all on the big scale. That's the broad sweep. But it comes from personal experience. Personal psyches, perennially buffeted by transience. When Robert Frost famously recognized nature's first green is gold, her hardest hue to hold, her early leaf's a flower, but only so an hour, and concludes, so dawn goes down today, nothing gold can stay. We know deep in our psyches that this is about more than flowers. Life is flux. Absolutely and completely. It's not only that nothing gold can stay. As we all know, nothing that isn't gold can stay either. At least nothing can or will stay the same. And the shakiness of it all shakes us. It's not just unnerving. There's poignancy in that awareness as well. Life is fragile. Life is fleeting. Kenneth Rexroth, remembering his mother, wrote, "We thought the years would last forever. They are all gone now. The days we thought would not come for us are here." As Puff learned, dragons may live forever, but not so little boys. The days never to come again, the years which don't last, even relatively simple things, things we liked as they were. We all know deep in our hearts with transience, with change of any kind, there is inevitable loss. Now, of course, transience is not nearly all bad news, not all volatility and decay. We're not the only parents who joke about wishing we could keep our daughter from growing up. But of course, in our more serious moments, we celebrate her development and maturation. Transience is another way of speaking about growth. Thich Nhat Hanh, in that reading we heard just last week in Charlotte Watkins' memorial service, because she wanted us to hear it in that setting, Thich Nhat Hanh asserts, without impermanence, life is not possible. How can we transform our suffering if things are not impermanent? How can our daughter grow up into a beautiful young lady, he asks. How can the situation of the world improve? Transience is not just the sad and shaky admission that life is flux. It's not just the personal, poignant recognition that life is fleeting. Transience is also the spark that motivates us to believe, my situation can change. This too will pass. And importantly, enables us to believe the world can change. We can change the world. Things don't have to stay this way. Transience is threatening. Transience is sad. Transience is good. Transience is hopeful. Transience is... That's it, actually. Transience is. If you suffer, counsels Thich Nhat Hanh from the very core of Buddhism, if you suffer, it's not because things are impermanent. It's because you believe things are permanent. Our primordial parents' religious search, the hope to find what doesn't change, was never satisfied, and it is destined to fail. So part of the work, the difficult spiritual work for all humans, entails coming to terms with transience, learning to accept life's innate and inevitable transitoriness, learning to live like a leaf, knowing something is tumbling every moment, something is falling away. Knowing we could tumble any second. And then deciding what to do with the life that we are given in this one wild and precious moment.